This is a special Pledge Week edition of the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. The Compass is an example of the kind of original, homegrown, community-oriented programming that makes KPTZ such a valuable local resource. To show your support for the kind of programming we are bringing to you with shows like The Compass, please call 554-4430 to make a generous donation right now. Or, if you'd prefer to listen to the show while you make your contribution, you can also give online at kptz.org. This week's Compass is also dedicated to the late Port Townsend activist Steve Hamm, whose lobbying efforts to overturn the Citizens United case that unleashed tides of corporate money into American politics directly led to what has been cited as the nation's most vibrant statewide chapter of the Move to Amend, the nationwide movement to amend the U.S. Constitution to make it clear that corporations are not what the writers of that revered document meant by the term people. Started by Hamm in Port Townsend, that organization is now known as the Washington Coalition to Amend the Constitution, or more informally, as WAMEND. WAMEND now has affiliates in towns across the state from Anacortes to Walla Walla, and last week launched a brand new petition drive to endorse such a constitutional amendment for the 2016 November election, known as I-735. I-735 campaign coordinator Gabe Meyer will be at the Port Townsend Community Center to make a presentation on the petition drive this Thursday evening at 7 p.m. But because Meyer was not available for an interview in advance of the meeting, we decided to rerun this interview about the Move to Amend with national spokesman and former Green Party presidential candidate David Cobb, who was in Port Townsend in February.
It's true. I did run for attorney general. I ran for president. But I also want to be clear. As a lawyer, I've sued corporate polluters. I've lobbied elected officials who already got elected. I ran for political office myself. But the thing I'm most proud of as an engaged citizen, I've been arrested for nonviolent civil disobedience. In the right crowd when that gets the applause line. Right? Like, yeah, ran for president. Oh, you got arrested? All right, good job.
2004 Green Party presidential candidate and self-identified American revolutionary David Cobb came to Port Townsend last weekend to help fan the flames of a rapidly growing movement he helped to create, known as the Move to Amend. Back in 2009, Cobb, who is a lawyer, was among a dozen people gathered in a living room one evening talking about a court case called Citizens United that was coming before the U.S. Supreme Court, a case that was soon to reshape the rules of money in politics in the United States by defining corporations as people and money as speech, giving corporations the right to spend as much as they wanted on the candidates of their choice. Cobb attracted an audience that packed the Port Townsend Community Center to overflow and spoke to them with the cadence of a Texan Baptist minister.
In fact, if we were going to stay in the Attic Greek language, we'd have to confess something. We don't have a democracy, we have a plutocracy. It's the rule by a wealthy elite. In fact, things are so bad, I think we might need to make up a whole new word. It's a kleptocracy. The rule by a thieving wealthy elite. Right? Because they are stealing from us. They are stealing our labor, to be sure. And they are stealing the natural world. What people before us understood to be the commons.
Yes.
What we all have and participate in common treasury for all, they are stealing that from us. And frankly, they are stealing our future. And what's more devastating, we got to come to terms with, they are literally stealing our children and our grandchildren's future.
I had the opportunity to speak with Cobb briefly before his presentation began. Why don't we start with how you got involved with the Move to Amend?
Well, listen, I do this work because I'm a true believer. As a little boy, I was taught that the United States of America stood for liberty, justice, and equality, and I believed it. And I was so proud to be an American. And as I grew up, I realized that I've been lied to, that this country is actually a racist, sexist, class-oppressive society, and the huge corporations, American corporations, were destroying the planet. I got involved in efforts to make the country a better place from the anti-apartheid work I did as a student activist at the University of Houston in the 80s. I worked on Jesse Jackson's campaign for president in 1984, 1988, Jerry Brown's campaign in 1992, and I realized that the Democratic Party's presidential primary process is where progressive politics goes to die. Basically, you don't build any institutional capacity. You don't build any infrastructure that lasts. And the corporatists and the militarists who run that party then tell progressives, okay, you had your fun in the primary, now sit down, shut up, and there's nothing left to do. So in the 90s, I got involved in not only Green Party organizing work, but also the grassroots global justice work. I was very active in the campaigns against the World Trade Organization and, you know, was part of the shutdown of the city of Seattle in November of 1999 around the WTO ministerial meeting there, was involved in the protests around the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Worked with a group called the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. I had a long history of fighting corporate power, and that was all through the 90s. So in 2010, actually in 2009, when I saw the Citizens United case in the lower courts, I realized that this was going to be bad. I knew that the Roberts Court, who had already gutted the Brown versus Board of Education decision, this is the most activist court that we have ever experienced in our lifetimes. Make no mistake about it, there has never been a more activist court willing to overturn laws around an ideology than the current court. So in 2009, I called a meeting of people who I had worked with to be fighting corporate power, over the decade.
Could we just like hold on for a second here, because I know what Citizens United is, and I think that a lot of our listeners probably do, but there's probably some people out there who don't quite know. So what was the Citizens United case?
Citizens United was a lawsuit brought by a nonprofit corporation who claimed that the movie that they had made, Hillary the Movie, which was clearly an election campaign piece attacking Hillary Clinton. This was a group that was attacking her from the right. And the Bush-appointed FEC commissioner said, this is clearly electioneering. You are violating the McCain-Feingold law. You know, John McCain, Republican, right. Russ Feingold, Democrat, a bipartisan agreement on trying to get money out of elections. So when I saw that case being argued, I knew that it was going to be bad. So I called a lot of people together before the opinion came down, and I said, we need to be ready. So I want to be clear. In 2009, Move to Amend was ready. The decision came down in 2010, and it was as bad as we thought it would be. Basically, completely overturned the McCain-Feingold law, opened up the floodgates to corporate money, not just in elections, but on the basis that corporations have constitutional rights.
Corporate personhood.
Corporate personhood. And corporate personhood is the shorthand for the illegitimate, totally court-created idea that a corporation has constitutional rights.
Which is actually an idea that evolved over a long period of time. This wasn't the only case.
Correct. Yeah. Indeed. And, of course, it's only gotten worse even since Citizens United. You've had McCutcheon. You've had Hobby Lobby. I mean, there's a whole history here. We were 12 people in a living room in 2010 when this – today,
that was the birth of Move to Amend.
Move to Amend. 12 people in a living room. Today, we're 382,000 people and growing every day. We have over 150 local affiliates, like the one here in Port Townsend, that is doing work for Move to Amend as Move to Amend organizers. We have helped 16 states pass resolutions of support. We've helped 600 city council and county commissioners pass resolutions of support. And the thing I'm most proud of, we've been on the ballot 300 times. In other words, not just city council members voting, but actual
voters,
right? Ordinary people. We've been on the ballot 300 times. Can you guess how many times we've won? 300. We haven't lost yet. And it includes San Francisco, California, and Boston, Massachusetts, and Madison, Wisconsin. You know, the liberal places. You know where else we've won? Salt Lake City, Utah. We've won in Waukesha, Wisconsin, which is Republican Tea Party Governor Scott Walker's hometown, where they haven't voted for a Democrat for president or Congress in over 40 years.
In other words, you've got broad bipartisan support.
It is very broad, and it is very deep. We were on the ballot in the state of Montana in a statewide initiative, not unlike what WAMEND is doing, gearing up to do at the state level here in Washington. But Montana is not what we would call a liberal bastion, right? We were on the ballot in a statewide initiative there, and we won over 75% of the vote. The point is that we are uniting principled liberals, principled conservatives, moderates, radicals, Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Libertarians, Independents alike. This is something that is bringing a broad cross-section of people together who say, we may not agree on policy proposals, but the principle of a democratic republican self-government we agree on. And the illegitimate court-created idea of corporate constitutional rights and money as speech is stealing our sacred right to self-government. I've never been part of anything that has grown so fast and is so systemic. This is actually going to change the ability for ordinary people to participate in our society and in our government. And it's a very exciting thing to be part of.
Now, what have these resolutions that have been passed in all these jurisdictions said? What's the substance of it?
In a nutshell, each and every one of them say only human beings have inherent inalienable constitutional rights, and artificial entities like for-profit corporations, non-profit corporations, and unions do not have inherent
living trust.
Constitutional rights. Living trust, you go down the list. Human beings have constitutional rights, period, full stop. And money is not the equivalent of political speech. In other words, money is property. And with that property, you can, in fact, buy microphones and amplifiers and drown out the voice of everybody else. So we say that campaign finance questions are political questions, right? And they should be determined through a political discourse and debate, and local communities should have the authority to decide how to best protect the integrity of their elections. State governments should have the same right and ability. And at the end of the day, it is a political question. And here's the thing. When the court turns a political question into a constitutional law question, you've just transformed we the people from active participants into mere spectators of a constitutional law question, where the courts tell us what we can or cannot do. And that's one of the reasons that Move to Mend is able to build such successful alliances with principled conservatives, because judicial activism is wrong. The court should not be able to overturn laws that are political decisions. Political decisions are the domain of the political process. The only time any law should be overturned is if the law violates the inherent inalienable constitutional rights of a human being, like Jim Crow segregation laws, or laws forbidding women from voting, laws forbidding people from being able to organize a trade union. That violates individual human beings' constitutional rights.
Let's get back to the Green Party for a moment.
Sure.
I mean, you were a Green Party candidate. Are you still a Green Party member? And are you planning to be a political candidate again?
Good for you as a reporter to ask the question. I'm honored and happy to say I am a Green Party member, and I have a long history as a Green, and I'm proud of that. But I also have a long history of working in coalition with Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians, and will continue to do that. At this point, I can tell you with absolute clarity and certainty, I am not seeking the Green Party's nomination for president. I am focused like a laser beam on the Move to Amend campaign, uniting Greens and Democrats and Republicans and Libertarians on this movement.
I'm sorry, do you have a title in the campaign?
Yes, I'm the national spokesperson. But I'm also, since you've asked, I'm very proud to tell you I'm one of 10 members of the national leadership team of Move to Mend. 10 of us.
Sounds like one of the founders.
One of the founders. And of 10 people on the national leadership team, you were talking to the only white man on the national leadership team. We are multiracial. We are multiethnic. We have more women than men. We have young people on our national leadership team.
How young?
Two in their 20s, two in their 30s, and one in their 40s. So,
who's the eldest?
Jerome Scott is 74. So we have elders.
How old are you?
I am 51. We've got black and white, brown, and we are also spread out across the country, the 10 of us. You have actually one of the members of the Move to Mend National Leadership Team is Edgar Franks from Bellingham, Washington in Whatcom County, where he is an organizer with Community to Community, a group that does work for migrant farm workers. And he is the son of migrant farm workers himself. We also have Maria Augusto, who is a Puerto Ricana activist out of Miami, Florida. Laura Bonham from Utah. In other words, we're literally spread out across the country. The point is, we're not based in Washington, D.C. We're in local communities where we are community organizers ourselves. Because too often, the nonprofit industrial complex in Washington, D.C., gets so wrapped up in just lobbying Congress in one election cycle that they're not doing the work of building grassroots movements. We are of the grassroots movement, and that's one of the reasons the success of 600 city council and county resolutions, 300 election campaigns. We're doing the work day by day, brick by brick, of building a mass movement in this country.
So what's the grand strategy? I mean, so you're getting these resolutions passed in all these local jurisdictions, and then so once the resolutions have been sitting there for a while, how do you get from there to an actual amendment to the Constitution?
Well, let's be clear. It is not that the resolutions sit there, right? I mean, because it is a tactic of educating and organizing for political power. Because Move to Amend is not only doing resolutions and we're not only doing initiatives, we are also rolling out the Pledge to Amend campaign, where we're going to candidates for office, whether you're an elected official already and serving as an incumbent or a challenger. It doesn't matter what party you're in. If you're running for office, we're going to ask you, do you support the Move to Amend effort, yes or no? And we're going to let voters know the answer. This is what they said. If you're running for office, you are going to have to answer that question because we're building a mass movement. Remember, 12 people to 382,000 people. In a few short years, we're growing by leaps and bounds. This movement has legs. It is uniting people. And at the end of the day, we believe what Samuel Gompers, the great trade activist, said. No permanent enemies, no permanent allies. We will reward our friends. We will punish our enemies. We are not taking direction from the leadership of either the Democratic or the Republican parties about what is allowed or not allowed. I'm willing to work with Democrats, Republicans, I don't care. But what I'm not willing to do is to be told what is acceptable to the leadership of either the Democratic or the Republican Party. And that's the distinction.
Let's talk funding a little bit. Do you have a lot of corporate sponsors?
Well, I appreciate the question. The answer is no, nor would we accept it. But I'm going to go you one better. We don't get foundation money either. We are the only group that's working in this area that has 100% of our funding coming from folks. 90% of our money comes at $35 to $50 a piece. Think about that for a minute. Almost all of our funding comes from ordinary people throwing down $35, $50, maybe $100, right? And at the end of the day, what that allows us to do is to exercise independence, because we're not just politically independent, we're financially independent.
Now, do you allow yourself to think in terms of a schedule or deadlines, like, you know, we want to have this mm-hmm. amendment in place by,
yes.
You know, what is that deadline?
Yeah, we would be clear. We have short, mid, and long-term goals. And the way we see it is we will be celebrating the ratification of the 28th Amendment, the Move to Amend proposal, in 10 to 15 years. And so we move backwards from there. Our plan for 2015 at the national level, we're hosting two nationwide leadership summits where we're bringing together organizers for Move to Mend, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, going deep into the legal history of the corporation and what I'll be talking about tonight, helping people and doing skills training and role-playing efforts so that they can actually get as comfortable as I am talking about the history, the social political context of the rise of corporate constitutional rights and what the hell is a corporation and where did it come from under law and, you know, just helping people that way. We're also, though, in 2015 in Washington State going to be working very closely with the WAMEND group, working on the statewide initiative, which is probably the single most exciting thing happening at the state level in 2015. And I can tell you, the Wamen group has the look and the feel and the air of inevitable success. This group is serious. They are credible. They are organized. They have a level of enthusiasm and esprit de corps that I've only seen a couple of times. And, you know, success breeds success, and you can feel it with the Wamen group. So the short, short term for 2015 in Wamen is a very exciting campaign.
Once again, WAMEND I-735 Campaign Coordinator Gay Meyer will be at the Port Townsend Community Center in Uptown starting at 7 p.m. Thursday, April 23rd, that's this Thursday, to give a presentation on the petition and to train attendees on the collection of valid signatures for a ballot initiative. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News on this special Pledge Week edition of KPTZ Compass, reminding you once again to phone 554-4430 or to sign on at kptz.org and give generously to indicate your appreciation of this kind of homegrown public affairs programming. And now for our second story in this special edition, we bring you a reprise of a story from last month about one of the many ways Port Townsend is reaching for economic and ecological sustainability.
In the 12 years that we've been doing this, we've installed over 435 grid-tied PV systems, totaling over 2.5 megawatts of generating capacity, which makes over 2.5 million kilowatt hours of solar electricity every year. We currently have 9 employees, 5 of whom are Port Townsend High grads, and we're supporting, thank you, we're supporting 4 Port Townsend mortgages and 8 kids right now in our family. So that is the context from which I'm speaking about the topic of EV tourism.
Port Townsend native Andy Cochran has a knack for spotting the economic opportunities offered by the quest for sustainability. And he started off his presentation about his latest project in that regard at this month's Chamber of Commerce luncheon at the Elks Lodge with a bit of boasting about the rapid growth of Power Trip Energy, the solar array installation company he and his high school buddy Stephen Carr founded in 2002, and which is almost singly responsible for the fact that Port Townsend now has the most solar installations per capita in the state. But the real subject of today's talk was an idea that came to him when he learned that Port Townsend is within driving range of most of Washington's electric vehicles. I talked with him about the Power Trip EV Tourism Initiative briefly just before the luncheon began.
We are installing electric vehicle charging infrastructure at numerous businesses in town that have all volunteered to give away the electricity and give away the parking. Four out of five of these spots have private parking spaces. The benefits are going to bring more customers to those businesses. They're going to bring more tourists into town in general. And we're going to replace more consumption of gasoline with the consumption of clean, locally generated electricity.
Are you hoping that people are going to be driving electric vehicles into town?
Absolutely. The ranges of most electric vehicles are 70 to 100 and some miles. That's the distance from which many of our tourists come here in western Washington. That gets us from Pierce County, King County, Snohomish, the major population areas. And we know that western Washington is among the highest per capita registration rates of electric vehicles in the nation. So many of our potential tourist clients have electric vehicles, and we also know that we don't currently have any good public transportation options for arriving at Port Townsend from out of the area. So all of these tourists come, and they all drive their personal vehicles, and more of those are going to be electric vehicles. The growth rate of electric vehicles is increasing at 20 to 40% per year in terms of sales. So, and there are many new models being introduced last year and scheduled for introduction next year. So I'm confident that the percentage of cars on the road being electric is going to increase.
Of course, one of the biggest issues with electric vehicles has been the difficulty in assuring that you'll be able to get charged up when you need to when you're out on the road.
That's right.
And as the owner of two different electric vehicles, that is what the times that we fall back on using our gasoline vehicle, it's because either A, we're going farther than the reasonable range of the electric, or because we're just not sure that we could charge up at our destination with enough time to come back. So as people plan their trips, they generally do the research, and that's pretty easy using an app called PlugShare that is available for the iPhone and Android or online on a PC. People will research that and look for charging stations in a particular location. And as of now, Port Townsend is going to show up as a hotspot for EV charging infrastructure when anybody with an electric vehicle does their research. And it's just going to, we already have a very attractive tourist destination and a very strong tourist pillar of our economy. And this is just going to be another thing to help bolster Port Townsend as a good tourist destination.
Aside from PlugShare, are there marketing plans for this? I mean, how are you planning to advertise that Port Townsend is this place?
Well, what we've done already just in the last couple of weeks is PlugShare and to various EV owners groups on Facebook. And we've seen the initial response, you know, although small in number and short in duration, has been really positive. I would suggest that any advertising and marketing that Port Townsend does to bring visitors should include the plethora of EV service equipment, you know, charging locations.
Is this still a twinkle in the eye, or is this like something where the charging stations are? I know that there's one at the co-op already, but
well, the one at the co-op, I wouldn't really call that a useful EV charging station. There's a few in town, the co-op and the UU Church, which is it's just a regular receptacle using 120 power that can, in effect, trickle charge the modern electric vehicles. What we really need is level 2 charging stations that's used by the Leaf, the Tesla, the Volt, the plug-in Prius, and all of the new electric vehicles that charges at a much, much faster rate. And so currently we've had 2 of those stations at our shop at Power Trip Energy. We have completed the installation of the first 2 of 5 that we're installing through the EV Tourism Initiative. Those are at the Northwest Maritime Center and at the Port Townsend Laundromat and Car Wash on Upper Sims Way.
Those are already installed.
Those are already in, and we know that those are already being used by locals and people from out of town. There's 3 more that will be installed imminently.
Do you have any way of measuring how much outside, how many tourists are using those?
We're measuring a couple things. We're going to measure the electricity that's used by the stations, and that'll give us some good information. We're also going to have some surveys at the sites to gather information that way as well. None of the sites are requiring registration or any information to use them, so we're not going to have a complete and total absolute record of who and how much is using them.
The final question, how long does it take to recharge your car enough to get back to Seattle?
Different cars and chargers charge at different rates, but it's pretty safe to say that 10 to 20 miles of range per hour can be added using these charging stations. So 50 miles back to Seattle could be 5 hours if the car is completely empty when it arrives. But a lot of times what people are looking for is just topping off.
Cochran said that Power Trip Energy had budgeted $5,000 for the donation of the first 5 charging stations, an outlay he says has already been repaid in full because an electric vehicle driver who came to recharge at the free charging station in front of Power Trip's offices ended up hiring the company to install a solar array at his home. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans, out of love for this town and this region and its people. The only pay I receive for my work is the pleasure of getting to participate in the things my reporting gives me entry to, and whatever signs of approval or praise I receive for my coverage. So, if you like the compass, please show the approval I crave and give generously right now by calling 554-4430. That's 554-4430. Or going online to our website at kptz.org. The Compass airs Mondays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., Wednesdays at 10 a.m., and Saturdays at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.